Hi, I'm Mary McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Chuck Mangione, and he's one of the great Pied Pipers of the jazz world. His mellow flugelhorn sound has charmed and delighted thousands of music lovers all over the world, including me, of course. And to coin a phrase, having Chuck on Piano Jazz makes me feel so good. Chuck, how are you?
So good to see you again, Mary.
I know, it's been ages. Ages.
We're real long-time friends.
I know.
I met you when I was about 12 in
you
Rochester,
New York. You looked about 12.
I feel 12 again.
Now, that must have been at Ridgecrest.
Yes, there was a... I think I was brought into the world at the best time. I was born in 1940, and when I was growing up, I got to hear all the big bands live, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Stan Kenton, Woody Herman, and others. And then there was this wonderful club called the Ridgecrest Inn in Rochester, New York, where groups would come and spend a week or 2 weeks, and they'd have a Sunday afternoon matinee, and my dad would take my brother Gap and me to hear whoever we wanted to hear. So 1 week you would be playing there, 1 week Cannonball Adderley would be there, the next week Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, the next week Dizzy Gillespie. So I was very, very fortunate to hear you and all the other wonderful people up close and personal at a very early age, and it was a terrific experience.
Well, you know, what I remember most of all about that is when Art was there and you were in the band and I was working somewhere else, I think, and I came over and he invited me to sit in, and I did sit in, but I was kind of shy and nervous, and I remember Art hollered out, "Play!" at the top of his voice, like, you know, I wasn't playing loud enough or whatever I wasn't doing, so, you know, I'd better, so
yeah,
he scared me into it.
Playing with Art Blakey, he used to yell a lot of things at everybody, "Play your instrument." I used to yell at Keith Jarrett when Keith was playing the piano, "Act like a fool, act like a fool," and Keith would jump inside the piano, start strumming the strings and playing all kinds of
now,
things.
Now, why did he say that, "act like a fool"?
I don't know. He just
that's so funny.
You know, the Keith, tenor player was always the new star on the modern jazz horizon, you know. But that was a treat.
Before we go any further, how about if we do a tune together? I'm dying to do that. And we're lucky today in as much as we have a bassist who I know very well, who is a wonderful bassist, Mr. Gary Mazzarapi on bass, and he'll join us. And what are we going to play?
Well, see, every time I get in this kind of context, which isn't very often, to play with people who play straight-ahead jazz and acoustic music, I go, it's like putting my shoes on backwards and walking into the past.
As opposed to what? Well, what do you play? What do you do?
Well, I play mostly things that I compose and that I write, and they're not very often played in the straight-ahead kind of style that I grew up loving and listening, so it's always a treat to play an old standard
song. Oh, I
song
see
like
what you mean. I see.
Tell
well,
by Starlight. How's that?
Well,
should we do that?
I'd love to do it. Love it. Thank you. Well, that was great.
See that?
Easy as pie. I started thinking all kinds of things while you were doing that. And I was thinking to myself, when you got into your career at Eastman, is that where you started writing at the Eastman School?
Actually, I was in the preparatory department at Eastman School of Music, took some theory, but I just kind of started writing at the piano and fell in love with melodies and trying to come up with. I was a very romantic guy and writing,
tried to write
a song, you know. But I never studied composition. When I went to the Eastman School of Music in 1958, I went there. I got in on probation. They said I didn't play my horn good enough, and they were right. But I went there to learn, but everybody who came there as a composer, they had already written symphonies and string quartets, so I couldn't even get in to one of the composition classes. And so it's always been kind of a hit and miss, keep a fragment of this around, a melody or a chord progression or a rhythmic pattern, and then maybe sit down and try to put a whole idea together.
Well, what came first, the piano? And then the horn?
As a matter of fact, when I was 8, my parents offered my sister Josephine, Gap, and myself, when we got to be 8 years old, piano lessons. And I liked the piano a whole lot. And then I took a music aptitude test in school and did pretty good. They said pick a band instrument. And I saw a movie called Young Man with a Horn with Lauren Bacall and Kirk Douglas, Big Spider back, I believe, was his life story. I said, give me one of those. And so it was the horn and the piano, and I studied both throughout high school and grammar school. And the piano has always fascinated me because it's visual. You know, when you play a flugelhorn or a trumpet, you got 3 valves, and you got all these notes you could play, but you can't play a chord, or you can't really see what the music looks like. And that's why I like to sit down at the. And an acoustic piano, you know, there's all the synthesizers today and people play and write at, but if you compose at the piano, it's kind of like a clean slate. It's a pure sound. It's not, well, I'll try it with strings or I'll try it with another artificial sound. It's just a clean, nice way to hear what you got in your head.
Well, why don't we play another tune? Is this one of your newer tunes?
This is actually a song that's on the current CD on Chesky Records, and the CD is called The Feeling's Back. And this is a song that my wife helped me title, Rosemary. When you're sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning, you got some music, and I was reflecting on a gentleman by the name of Aldovio Cassano, a good friend from Rochester, who is always a very debonair dancer and all the hippest affairs, and he was in Pittsburgh waiting for a heart transplant for the longest time. I mean, I don't know how people do that, but I would call him almost every day, and I'd send him music and everything. I got to know the doctors, and one day my phone rang, and it was the doctor, and said, say hello to Alan. We just put the heart in, calling me from the operating room, you know.
And oh, wow.
So the name of this song is Aldovio. Thank you.
Chuck, that is a lovely tune. I mean, I think you've had so many hits in your life with all your different bands and orchestras, but I think that's one of the best of the new ones, don't you?
I like all the songs that I write. I don't feel like I have much to do with them. I think I keep my antennas out there and hope that some new information comes in. And then if I'm blessed with that information, I take very good care of it. I sit there and until it's something I can really accept and say that's as good as I can get it.
Boy, that's really fantastic. And we've got a lot more music to come. But right now, I want to remind you that my guest is Chuck Mangione. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. Here's a tune that was very popular. I'm glad you suggested this one.
Are you talking about Land of Make-Believe?
I'm talking about Land of Make-Believe.
Yeah, and there's a song I wrote originally that we recorded with the quartet as an instrumental.
With Jerry Niewood and Esther Satterfield.
First with the quartet, a quartet with Jerry and with Ron Davis and
oh,
with Joel
goodness.
DeBartolo. We did just an instrumental version. And later on, after I had met Esther, I said, boy, this might be kind of interesting to make a complete work out of this rather than just a tune you play the melody and go. So I wrote some lyrics to it, and I orchestrated it, and we recorded it at Massey Hall with the Hamilton Philharmonic Orchestra, and one night live, one take on everything. And I think it's a special album because the music is still, I think, as valid today as it was then, and it's...
It is.
It's not like you need to electrify everything or update things.
They just stand the way they are. Goodness. Well, we're talking about Land of Make-Believe. It would be nice to play that.
Sure.
So,
why don't we try it?
Let's try it. Thank you. know, that tune is so wonderful. And they started playing it a lot on a station here in New York.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing with Land of Make Believe, on the recording, it's an 11-minute version, so you would think that nobody would be able to play it. But there were certain stations back then. There was a station in New York. There was a station in Miami where they just made this kind of like their national anthem. I mean, they would play the full version. They played a couple times a day, and people passionately fell in love with this song.
Maybe those times will come back.
I hope so.
Let's hope.
I think so. But anyhow, why don't we get to something of yours, give my chops a rest, and maybe play one of your songs for me?
I'd love to, actually.
Which one are you going to play?
Well, this is a ballad, and it's something... actually, I wrote this a long time ago, and Peggy Lee put a nice lyric to it. It's called In the Days of Our Love.
All right.
But I'm not going to sing it. Don't worry about that.
Thank you.
This is the way I was groomed as a young person, and I loved listening to solo piano pieces and to melodies and beautiful chord changes, and that was a treat.
Thank you. Well, more talk and music in a minute, but first I want to let you know that my guest is Chuck Mangione. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company. Funny, I've often wondered how you put some of your orchestrations together. I mean, I guess everybody has a different way of doing it, but I know people like to know these things, like how do you start with a little piano, or do you hear the whole thing in your head, or maybe you can explain a little bit about it.
Well, first of all, not having studied composing or orchestration, I fell in love with records like Billie Holiday, Lady in Satin, Clifford Brown with strings, the Gil Evans stuff with Miles Davis, and so I used those sounds and what I heard there as kind of a basis for what I would be looking for if I put an orchestral thing together. And I find myself orchestrating what I play on the piano a lot of times. For example, on the song that I'm going to attempt to play on the piano called Chase the Clouds Away, there's a thing that the piccolo player plays. Which is probably easy to play on the piano, but the piccolo players always take that and put in their orchestral excerpt book to work on, you know. But on Chase the Clouds Away, it has lyrics, which I wrote later on, but I just probably started out playing this little vamp that I play on the piano, and then eventually everything I played, maybe chordally, was put there for maybe the strings to play, to arpeggiate, or the brass to play. But I'll play Chase the Clouds Away, which is on an album called Chase the Clouds Away with a 50-piece orchestra. And it's virtually just an orchestration of what I have played on the piano, picking different instruments and maybe painting the picture with all the colors the orchestra that are available.
Well, I'd love to hear what you do with this, so here we go with a solo version of it.
Thank you.
Well, see, now I'm thinking to myself, who would play this part? Like, the... would you, okay, horn players?
One time two French horn players play that. And sometimes a couple of flute players played that. But I had the trombones playing.
And then you've got a gallon of bass fiddle players right. All sawing away.
That's it. It's such a treat, you know, to have an orchestra and to have all the colors of the orchestra available. Because a lot of the things that I write aren't really meant to play bebop on, or they're kind of like little paintings. And if you start to fool with them too much, it doesn't do anything for them. So I kind of like to just play the melody and have an outstanding instrumentalist play that melody and kind of orchestrate and paint the colors a little bit, rather than the old play 16 bars and then everybody plays, you know, a few choruses and then you play the 16 bars again. Because
well,
I think some of the songs aren't really meant to be blown on, you know?
No, well, that's one way of doing it, but then you can also... And I'm sure you've written, you're talking about bebop, I'm sure you've written and played some bebop in your time.
Oh, I mean, I was weaned on bebop, and it's still my favorite music to play. And you know, I recorded with my brother Gap with the Jazz Brothers, Sal Nistico and Roy McCurdy and Steve Davis. And so we did all of that bebop playing, and
let's do one.
There is one tune that I wrote a while back, and it has two different themes. The one we'll play is the one, the bebop one for my musical father, Dizzy Gillespie, and this is called Dizzy Miles.
Dizzy Miles. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Boy, how about that with a 60-piece orchestra?
Yeah, that would be. Well, you know, when I play with my small band, I usually have everybody play the melody. So if I did do it with orchestra, I would have everybody playing it. That melody together would be kind of fun to do that.
Well, see, it's nice to have a little...
John Hendricks wrote lyrics to it that are really very interesting, although you have to do it a little slower than we just did it for him to get all the words in.
You don't sing it, then?
Oh, no, no, I don't sing. I do not sing.
Well, that's it's a very cute tune. What's that? Dizzy Miles.
Dizzy Miles.
He would have enjoyed that. He would have really... I mean, Dizzy. Well, I guess they both would, but Dizzy would have had fun with that one.
Yeah. This definitely was the Dizzy side, you know, and Dizzy was my, I refer to him as my musical father. He was the first jazz musician I met when I was young who wasn't afraid to let the audience know he was having a good time. And he would, you know, he's a brilliant trumpet player, a great composer, a great conductor, a great arranger. He worked with small groups and big bands, but he would tell the people what he was going to play, who was in his band, tell him a little story, or there was always joy associated with his performance, and that was a very big influence, I think, on me as a young person to want to not be the one that turned his back to the audience or where the musicians always were so hip that the people couldn't understand it. But Dizzy had people listening to bebop, some of the most complex music ever, and having a wonderful time.
God, he was so funny. I loved that thing he used to do. And now I'd like to introduce the band. And he had everybody shake hands with each other. Things like
well,
that.
Well, they didn't call him Dizzy for nothing.
No, no.
You see this little medallion I have around my neck is a replica of Dizzy's updo trumpet. And he gave me one of his real horns when I was a teenager. And many years later, I got a call from the New York Jazz Museum. They were having a display of trumpets by all the great trumpet players. They had everybody's horn, but Dizzy was out of the country, and they asked if they could borrow my Dizzy horn. I said, sure. And 3 weeks later, opened up the paper, it said, Dizzy Gillespie's horn stolen from the New York Jazz, and it was my horn. I was heartbroken.
I remember that.
Christmas time, a little package came. I opened it up, and inside was this little representation I wear around my neck of his horn. Note from Dizzy said, don't lose this one, Diz.
Don't take that one off, whatever you do. Mm-hmm. Well, more talk and music in a minute, but first I want to let you know that my guest is Chuck Mangione. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. Now, I think it's on the new record. I'm not sure that you've got a beautiful ballad, La Vie en Rose.
Yeah, on the Feelings Back CD, the Chesky Records CD.
Yeah.
You know, I remembered, I don't know how I got to want to play this song, but again, when I was a young kid, every year our piano teacher we'd go by her house and she would have a little machine that would cut the first direct-to-disc recordings they ever made.
No kidding.
They would on the vinyls. You would just drop the needle, and you know, I would say, I am Chuck Mangione, and I'm 9 years old, and I would like to play on the trumpet La Vie en Rose. This was my first trumpet solo, and my mother used
you
to come to hear me play.
You were a little ham even then. See how you are?
But my mother would come to hear me play, and she used to pray and say rosaries that I was going to make it to the last note. And so 50 years later, I think, the recording, I finally got it right. But maybe we should try and...
I'd love to play that.
Together.
It's a beautiful tune. Let's do it.
All right.
Boy, that's really fantastic. I mean, you have incredible control to do a thing like that. You must spend hours at home practicing, Chuck.
You know, I never was a good practicer. I just fell in love with music and baseball as a kid, and that's all I did. But I would listen to records. I would play along with records. I would play at the piano. But I didn't practice a whole lot. And eventually your natural ability can only carry you to a certain point, and then the technical side has to catch up. And I become much more comfortable with the instrument and maybe learning, understanding a little bit more about the fact that has more to do with maybe walking up a flight of stairs and getting the air happening rather than sitting there and having that piece of meat against the metal all the time. It's just a matter of being in control, I think, of the air that you put through the horn. I think a lot of people, when they play the flugelhorn, especially if they're trumpet players, fatigue on it right away because they overblow the instrument. With the trumpet, it seems the more you give it, the more you get. With the flugelhorn, it's almost a more gentle approach, and the strength is in the lower and middle register instead of having the power and the brilliance of the trumpet. And
that's what I've always loved about it. You know, and of course, Jimmy played the cornet, but mm-hmm. he did occasionally play the flugelhorn. Yeah. I just love the sound of it. It's so mm-hmm. mellow and gentle.
My favorite flugelhorn player, late Art Farmer, was definitely my hero as far as flugelhorn players.
Well, you know, I've had such a good time having you here. It's been so long since we've talked or played or anything. So thanks so much for taking the time.
For me, it's a treat to be able to see and get the papal blessing of those who I grew up loving, who are my teachers. And you've been a good friend and a fan of the music for a long time, and I really appreciate being here.
Well, I've certainly been a fan of your music, and now we just have time for one more, which I'm sure everybody's sitting out there saying, when are they going to play Feel So Good?
Yeah, I always, when I introduce the song at the concerts, I say, I'd like to play a song of mine that, thanks to you people, put my two daughters through college.
Well, let's do it and see if I can play the right things behind you on this. Thank you. That is a great piece.
Feels so good to be with you.
And great to be with you.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with host Marian McPartland and her guest Chuck Mangione. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Shari Hutchinson, recording engineer Richard Applegate, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Audrey Shiflett, executive producer Tom Clark. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To learn more about the artists and music selections on this series, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz and NPR. Support for the original production of this episode was also provided by the National Endowment for the Arts, Borders Books and Music, the Baldwin Piano Company, and the Joseph Drown Foundation. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.